Okay, welcome to our special edition podcast of Between the Bubbles. I am Brayden.
This is Darren.
And the two of us together are going to be talking a bit about some of the comics inspirations that may have influenced Christopher Nolan in preparing and in writing and in creating The Dark Knight Rises, as well as the other Batman films that he's made.
This is one of those podcasts that it's why you do podcasts as a comic book geek, so you can discuss things like this and share it to everyone on the internet. And even for people who aren't into comic books, I have many friends who don't like comic books that much, aren't interested in reading them, but they love comic book movies, and they have asked me, okay, who is Bane? Where did he come from? Because they all know as well that Batman Begins and The Dark Knight were taken from different stories that were written, so they've asked as well, what major story arcs did they use for The Dark Knight Rises, and are they similar, are they different? So I'm very much looking forward to this podcast.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. We should be able to delve into who Bane is, why he's important, what sort of things we can expect from this film, at least from the trailers, things that we think were kind of cribbed from the comics and things like that, and it should be a lot of fun. So today we're basically going to be discussing our four primary texts are, first off, Frank Miller's Batman The Dark Knight Returns, which I think has been one of the most influential Batman comics ever written.
That's why Batman is the way that he is today.
A combination of The Dark Knight Returns as well as Frank Miller's Year One. Those two titles completely revolutionized and changed the way that Batman would be portrayed in comics and in cinema, I believe.
And well, some Batman writers were very mad at Frank Miller for what he did. He felt like they bastardized their creation, but you know what? It was for the better, because
you know, there's a reason why this interpretation of Batman has continued.
Yes.
And you know, sometimes it goes a little too far. I've always loved how Gail Simone talks about writing Batman and how she hates Batman when he's a dick. That's what she always says. Now, she always prefers writing Batman as a little more sympathetic, and I agree with her.
Which she's doing
a
great job with Batgirl.
I prefer Batman when he's a bit more sympathetic, but I understand why sometimes he's portrayed as so uncompromising and such a jerk. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it takes to be Batman.
You have to emotionally let yourself go.
Yeah. So where do you think we should start? We're going to talk about Dark Knight Returns. We're going to talk about Nightfall, which is a Batman story which introduces Bane for the first time. We're going to talk about a little bit of the background concerning Bane with a couple of titles that have been collected in a trade called Batman vs. Bane. Basically, it's one called Vengeance of Bane and one called Bane of the Demon that discuss a little bit more of Bane's backstory, who he is, all that kind of stuff. And then also we see a lot of parallels with another big Batman event called No Man's Land. So those are the four main big comics that we're going to be talking about in this this podcast. But
I think we should start with so Batman vs. Bane has two titles. It has The Vengeance of Bane, which is Nightfall was when Bane was first introduced in the regular Batman series. Vengeance of Bane was its own standalone issue that was basically prepping people for Nightfall.
Yeah.
Who is Bane? Where does he come from? What makes this character want to attack Batman and basically destroy him? And the other issue, it's more modern. It's also written by Chuck Dixon, who wrote Vengeance of Bane and who wrote Nightfall. It's not super important. It's not a great issue. It's one of those things where if you like Bane, maybe you can check it out, maybe not. The title of it is Bane of the Demon. It's how he's really introduced to Talia al Ghul and Ra's al Ghul, and some people speculate that Bane is over the League of Shadows in The Dark Knight Rises, so if you're someone who is of that theory, this is basically where it starts off, with him possibly, because in the comics he does overtake the League of Assassins, which it is in the comics, so it is a viable theory that he could be over the League of Shadows for the new movie, but
all right,
it's not a great issue.
Let's talk a little bit about Bane. Who is Bane?
Bane,
at least in the comic books.
In the comic books.
We haven't seen the movie yet, obviously, because we don't have press cred.
Well, I think we should start with the history of the creation of Bane.
Okay,
because
take us.
Superman, you know, the big huge event in the 90s in Superman was the death of Superman by Doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very successful. And then about a year later, you had Nightfall, which is where someone actually, literally, physically breaks Batman, snaps his back over his knee, and just, I mean, he's paralyzed.
Yeah, so, it remains one of the most iconic moments, I think, in all of
the comics. And it's still to this day, I mean, the artwork is very 90s, but when you see him just slamming Batman's back over his knee, it still is, it's an awesome sight to see. So there's debate as to whether Chuck Dixon will say that the creation of Bane in the Nightfall story arc was already in development before the, or at the same time as the development of the death of Superman, and so it wasn't as a consequence of the death of Superman. I personally think that DC thought, oh, Superman was very popular when he died. It's one of the top selling issues ever. So we'll just do the same thing with Batman. Why not? We can't kill him because he's human, but at least maybe cause something dramatic that will greatly alter his circumstances and will break his back. So that's my personal belief. Yeah. But he was made in the mid 90s.
I think that that's the most telling, is that these are mid 90s comics, because what consequence has resulted from both of these? Like long term consequences? None.
Yeah.
Superman was dead for how long? Less than a year.
Yep. Which Batman, is a great run, by the way.
Yeah. And Batman was paralyzed for how long?
About a year.
It's not like this was a long-standing, long-lasting thing, like when Barbara Gordon became Oracle. Mm-hmm. She was Oracle for almost, you know, over 20 years at that point. She was trapped in that wheelchair. That was an altering moment for her. Or, you know, So rarely does a comic book character actually stay dead. Even ones that you really think probably were gonna stay dead never stay dead. But, you know, I really... if anything, that's the problem with 90s books to me, is that...
It's kind of gimmicky.
So rarely are there lasting ramifications from the things that happen in them. Which is a shame.
Yeah, I am glad, though, that Batman came back, because they had Azrael.
Azrael was horrible.
He was horrible.
Azrael was a horrible.
If you're interested,
altogether.
Right now they have Nightfall. They have old Nightfall, basically in three volumes, and then now they've come out. Obviously, The Dark Knight Rises. They're giving out, revamping those volumes with even more material, which I feel like is way too much, and it's kind of, you don't really need it. If I were you, I'd look to see if you can get the original Nightfall trade paperbacks, volume 1, 2, 3. 2 or 3 deal with Azrael Moore and Batman coming back. They're not as interesting, but definitely volume 1. It really, I know it's 90s and it's kind of gimmicky with Bane, but it really is a great, great read. So, anyway, to your original question for who is Bane.
Who is Bane?
Bane is actually, lives on an island, and he's the son of a fighter in an attempted coup in a Republican in Caribbean,
like Santa
Caribbean
island.
Yeah,
it's a made-up one called Santa Priscan, but you know, it's basically an analog to, say, Cuba or the Dominican Republic, place like that.
Well, and it's funny because they actually say what causes this coup is as a result of
what happened in Cuba. Yeah.
And you know, before I read these stories, people say, "Oh, Bane is from South America." That is false.
Yeah,
he is not from South America.
I had always heard he was from Argentina.
Yeah, no.
No, he's from the Caribbean.
Argentina.
He's from the Caribbean.
He's not from South America. We need to definitely get rid of that now. But what happened is his mother, so they didn't know who the dad was. They never caught the father. And so they brought in his mother to be at the prison, but only a male could actually serve the sentence of the father according to the laws of this Santa Priscan. How do you even say it? You're the Spanish.
Santa Priscan.
Yeah, we'll just have you. I can't do the roles of the R's. So, you're amazing at it. So, what happens is while his mother is there, Bane is born. So, Bane is born in this prison, which is called Prison Panaduro. And I want you to give the correction of what it means, because they misinterpret that, translation.
In the Vengeance of Bane, it calls the prison Penaduro, and then translates that as the hard stone. Technically, pena means punishment, so he's saying the hard, like the extreme punishment, or the hard punishment is the name of the prison, where he's born into a life sentence.
Which, you know, when you read the story and you see what his circumstances were and the circumstances of the criminals there, it's a very fitting name.
Yeah.
So, now Bane is born into this terrible, terrible environment. And the thing is that's very interesting is, I think they're going to do this in the movie, is you're seeing two people with Batman and Bane who or given circumstances out of their control, it's not Bane's fault that his dad was this mercenary, you know, fighter, and he has to serve the sentence. It's not Bruce's fault that his parents are killed. But you see the different reactions of two men who are dedicated physically, mentally to their cause, and I think Bane is a mirror image of what Batman could have been if he would have chosen to not do the moral fight that he does. And I think they're going to explore that in the movie. That's just my hunch. But
I hope so.
The thing is, when Bane is younger, he's a sweet kid. I mean, he has a teddy bear that he's always carrying with him called Osoito.
Osoito.
Osoito. What does that translate
to? Little bear.
Little bear?
Osito.
Very, very literal. And, you know, Bane is just a sweet child, but the thing is, when he sees all the, you know, the fighting that goes on around, the death, the harsh punishment of the prison mates, and his mother is very unemotionally attached. She's just kind of this lifeless dead body.
Yeah.
Even though she's alive. And yeah, so
she's useless.
As a result, Bane becomes very hardened, very, very emotionally closed. In fact, when his mother died, he didn't even cry. So then when his mother dies, this prison warden, who is, for whatever reason, has it out for Bane. I don't really even know why. They don't
explore very well.
But it's 90s comics. Of course, you have to have him hate Bane for whatever reason.
It's more fun that way.
Yeah, and it's a prison warden. It's always more intriguing when the prison warden is just this angry, angry individual.
Of course.
So the prison warden says, look, you're not by yourself. The state is not your caretaker. You now have to basically fend for yourself. You're going out in general population with all these prison inmates, and you're alone. Good luck. And so now Bane, as a six-year-old, goes out there and has his own cell. And of course, people see that Bane could be a huge advantage. This little six-year-old who, you know, he could sneak around the prison, get them supplies. And so now you see some jockeying for having Bane in their group. And as a result, there's a fighting for Bane. And in about the second or third story, not a catwalk, but, you know, like where the, you know, you have the prison cells and you have this pit in the middle.
Yeah.
And Bane actually ends up getting knocked over the rail and falls what you think is his death. And this is the pivotal moment of Bane and who creates who he is, because he didn't die, but he's in a coma.
Yeah.
And while he's in a coma, he has his vision of his future self. And this future self is basically saying, "You, not that you can, but you will be doing great things. You come from a kingship bloodline, which you find out later on his dad is King Snake. He's not literally really a king, but he's really just a British mercenary. But anyway, so you have this bloodline. You can do great things, and the only thing holding you back is fear, and you need to overcome your fear. You need to be a man." And it's interesting because then appears this big, large bat figure. And it reminds me of Batman Year One, where Batman dedicates himself to being Batman in the sense where, I wanted to avenge the death of my parents. I want to you know, protect those who can't protect themselves, so we don't have another situation like mine. And then the bat comes in for them to the final reveal of, that's who I'm going to be.
Yeah.
And for Bane, it was, you know, his future self telling him, this is who I'm going to be. But now, like, Batman has his enemies who are the villains of Gotham. He then has his bat that comes before him that he now focuses his fear,
like his singular mission,
yes,
to destroy the bat.
Yes, and he doesn't know who Batman is at this point.
No, it's for some reason the vision that he has.
Yes, of course. Once again, 90s comics, you have to do it. So then, is from then on that point, he is going to be dedicating himself to being the man that he saw in his vision, and he ends up killing prison guards to protect himself. He actually kills the man who first tried to get him to join his gang. And the man doesn't have a name. He's just this overweight, kind of looks like this just really slimy, creepy guy. And as a result, Bane is put into was it Cavidad Oscuro, which means...
La Cavidad Oscura means like the dark cavity, or it's like this solitary confinement cell that they put Bane in. It's just like a hole in the ground, essentially.
And if you want to talk about rough upbringing, this is exactly where it happens. It's not like he's stuck in this place for a month. It's not like he's stuck in this place for a year. He's stuck in this place for 10 years, where it literally is under sea level. So every single time at night when the water rises, he has to fight for his life to not drown. And I mean, it's not like it's just little fish that are in there. I mean, he's dealing with sharks. He's dealing with water predators, which I don't know how you are. The ocean scares the crap out of me. I saw the movie Jaws when I was younger. And
that scars you for life.
Oh, my gosh. I'm from Los Angeles. All my friends surf. I will not get past the water and I can't touch the bottom because I'm afraid and it's impractical. If I'm even in ocean, open lake water, I have this fear that something's going to come
lake
bite
Placid's
me.
Gonna
oh,
happen.
Really? There's really? I never saw. All I had to see was the preview and the trailer for Lake Placid and I was scarred because it just, you're out of your element. You're out of your control.
Well,
I can't control anything that's going on in the water.
Don't watch the trailer for Piranha 3DD or you don't want to go to the water park either.
Yeah, so when I saw this scene, I was reading in the Vengeance of Bane, I really could relate because it just, if not that I'm swimming away from sharks, but it really just, the ocean scares and freaks the crap out of me. So we see him in this environment, and then during the day, I mean, he's fighting off rats and spiders, and he was there for 10 solid years, and this is where the only thing that drove him was his hatred of his situation and that, once again, that vision of his future self and of that bat creature. And so finally, the warden gets kind of sick of Bane because he never died. That's the reason why they put them in there anyway, because he thought he'd die in a year or two.
Yeah, it was just a goal to get him.
Maybe in a couple days, yeah. So now Bane has come out and he's more hardened than ever. And any semblance of that young little child that had that teddy bear
is gone,
and it's just destroyed. And so he then becomes friends with a couple people, one named Bird, who's actually from Gotham. And it's, once again, you know, in comic books, you always have everything literal. The Joker is a clown. The Riddler likes to make riddles. The Penguin loves penguins. The Bird can, for whatever reason, birds are drawn to him. So it's kind of a corny name, but the guy works.
Yeah.
And so Bird's telling him about Gotham and just about the world, because Bane, all he knows is his prison. That's all he's ever known. And so he's asking Bird about where he's from. He's all, I'm from Gotham. He's all, what's Gotham like? So, well, it's this city. But he's all, who runs Gotham? Because Bane knows that, look, if I have kingly bloodline, I need to rule something. Isn't that practical? Isn't that logical?
Isn't that what kings do?
Yes. So I want to rule this city, Gotham. Who rules it right now? And Bird tells him, well, there's this man called the Batman. And all of a sudden it clicks.
And then Bane knows what he needs to do. Yep.
That bat vision that I had is speaking of Batman. I need to figure out who Batman is. And in the process, Bane, it reminds me of Malcolm X. Malcolm X was educated because he educated himself in prison. And Bane, the same exact thing. He would read books, and not just, you know, reading to read, but military, history, anything that would give him a competitive advantage in the world, and once again, how to rule cities. And, I mean, did you ever get the impression that Bane wants to, I don't know, rule the world, but he definitely wants to rule Gotham City. And it's just interesting, once again, like I said, you have Bruce Wayne, who did the same exact dedication.
Yeah.
Same exact. And so I love that parallel with Bane and Batman of the same mental capacities. And then, of course, you have, you know, he's experimented on for Venom, but once again, before I read the story, I always thought that he had to be experimented on. They had no choice. No, Bane had a choice. He chose.
He volunteered.
He volunteered. Everyone died, and Venom makes him stronger. We all know that. And he survived, and that was the last straw, where he knew now that I'm ready to take on greater things. So he escapes the prison, kills the warden by throwing him into the same ocean and you know, the same watery grave where he gets eaten by sharks, just like what they did to his mom. And he always, I forgot to mention this earlier, when his mom died, they just put her in a sack and threw her off for food for the sharks, and that always stuck with Bane. And he did the same thing to the warden. So,
yeah.
When it comes down to the movie, we're not going to give spoilers.
I'm sure that his mask does not deliver. Make him tall, juice. Like, Venom is not this thing. And at least in the movies, I don't think he's even going to have Venom. It's not going to like make him more buff and more manly or anything. Basically, from what little I've read, it delivers anesthetic to him.
Yes.
Very, very small doses so that he is always on the verge of breakdown from the amount of pain that he's suffering from.
Yes.
What's causing that pain? We don't know. But this is a man who lives with constant pain and constant discomfort, and he has honed himself into a weapon.
And the interesting thing is people are speculating that they'll go into type an origin story with Bane. I think they will. Some of the images in India, and it looks like there's this like this old castle, and it looks to me like that could be the prison of where Bane was at, in the prison Panaduro. And so I'm very much looking forward to see how they do the origin, how it's similar to the comic book origin, how different it is, because it is going to be somewhat different.
Yeah,
but
I mean, obviously we know he's not going to be a Latin American. Thomas Hardy's not very Latin American.
No, he's not.
But yeah, the thing that's always interested me about Bane is that he's such a like an interesting character in terms of his backstory, but he still just looks like such a ridiculous 90s.
Oh, the luchador mask.
I mean, I love a luchador as much as the next guy, but they're dumb looking. And so I've always felt like Bane got the short shrift of being a character that was introduced in the 90s. If he had, say, been introduced back in the 50s or the 60s, I think he would have a classic, iconic look to him. Even if it was kind of silly, I think it would have been updated in the 90s to something awesome instead of being kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't even know why they made him look like a Mexican wrestler.
Yeah, especially
because he's not from Mexico. No, he's from the Caribbean.
It's silly, but, he's got to get that venom in him somehow. But at any rate, when they first announced that Bane was going to be the villain in The Dark Knight Rises, I was really hesitant. I mean, I trusted Christopher Nolan because he makes good movies, but I just thought he was not the right, the right character to be the final in your final movie of your trilogy. Have that be the bad guy.
It's very controversial.
But I think it's going to work. I'm not sold on the design. I'm not going to lie. I don't like. I mean, when you saw the Joker, you were like, dang, that's the Joker, But I look at this version of Bane, and I'm like, well, he's really built, but that mask is still pretty weird looking.
I have to disagree. I love the look.
I know it'll be a good movie, but
I will say this. I was fortunate enough when they had this first, 6 minutes of The Dark Knight Rises before Mission Impossible 4 when you saw an IMAX. It was playing in L.A., so I was home visiting my parents for Christmas, and I saw it. And he looks so creepy.
So it works.
It works. Okay. It works on the screen, and when you hear his voice, and that was even before they even, made it louder.
Cleaned it up a little.
When they first reveal him, just like when you're watching The Dark Knight and you first see Joker take off his mask
off.
And you're just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's the same. For me, it was the same thing. It was, wow, this Bane was the right choice. Tom Hardy was the right actor. And I feel like it was the right design. And that, the first 6 minutes sold me. And
good to know.
Look forward to it. I mean, I like the sequence in The Dark Knight more because the Joker's the Joker.
And it's such a classic sequence. That opening sequence.
Because you're like, everyone's blowing each other away.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, I was just like, well, this is not what I expected.
Exactly.
Because you've never seen that in a superhero movie before, but I'm very excited for this.
Well, and in this one, they takes a sequence where Batman does something to something very creative, very strategic, very planned to catch one of the villains he's trying to catch in The Dark Knight, and this is very similar to what Bane does as well, because he's trying to pick someone up, but it's even grander than what Batman does. So it's, to me, once again, feeding that theory that I personally have, that they're going to mirror of Bane is what Batman could have been if different circumstances. So
that's a little bit of background on Bane, but the first time he was really introduced in the comics was in the Nightfall series of comics, which is basically Bane comes to Gotham
And I don't really, I didn't read carefully enough to figure out if they mention how he figured out who Bruce Wayne, who Batman was.
Yeah,
do they really
they
ever
don't.
Go into it? I didn't think they did.
He just does.
But he somehow figures out that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And he systematically breaks him down. He opens Arkham Asylum and gets all of those baddies out. All at the same time, doing their normal baddie thing. You've got Zaz and the Joker and Penguin and Poison Ivy, and all of these guys are running around causing ruckus, and Batman is doing everything he can to try to bring some semblance of control back to Gotham City, and it just slowly but surely breaks him down. It felt really similar, although done much better, in what Scott Snyder has done with the Court of Owls in the last year worth on the Batman comic. Just that systematically breaking him, slowly but surely taking away all his defenses, all of his strength, all of his resources, until there's nothing left. And that last issue, especially if you get the shorter three-volume one that we read, I don't know if this is where the longer one ends, but the last issue is the issue where Bane just shows up in Wayne Manor and says, I'm here to break you.
Yep.
And the issue is Batman doing everything he can to try to stop him.
I love the look when he walks in. He's just so tired. He's just like, oh, crap.
He's got his face. He's just pulled his robe over the bat costume. And then Bane is standing there and says, well, Mr. Wayne, I'm here to stop you.
Yep. In his house. Not the Batcave. He's in his house.
In his house. It's really arresting, and it all just builds to that climax, that scene of him snapping Batman's back over his knee. It's one of the most iconic panels in all of Batman comics, and then just drops him to the ground and walks away.
Just like, I mean, the movie. I mean, just like the when you see the preview where, you know, Bane just walking off cocky, has a broken mask, and drops it.
Drops it and walks away.
And the thing that I am looking forward to, because in this Nightfall, you really said, why did Bane break everyone out? The reason he broke everyone out is so that he could study how Batman fights different situations, different abilities of his opponents.
Yeah, it was to understand exactly who Batman was.
Exactly, and he was also very intrigued. At the end of Vengeance of Bane, he sees that Batman doesn't kill. And Bane is like, why not? Why are you so moral? And so then I personally think, then I'll explain it, I think Bane is also intrigued to see the psychology of Batman. Why does he do the things that he does? And so I'm interested to see in the movie how they played out, because you see from the trailers that there is a prison break.
Yeah.
So, and it looks like Bane staged it. Mm-hmm. So are they going to play that into the movie? I think so. And I'm interested to see where the breaking of Batman takes place, because it looks like it's a sewer. And in the Nightfall story, Batman fights Killer Croc in a sewer that looks very similar to the scene of Bane fighting Batman in the Dark Knight Rises trailers.
Yeah.
And so, is it in the Batcave? Is it going to take place at just another part of the Batcave we haven't seen before because it's revamped for the new movie? Or is it really taking place in a sewer system, paying homage to the scene with Killer Croc and Batman fighting in Nightfall? I'm intrigued to see how that works out.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Again, Nightfall is pretty interesting if you just want to see like the systematic destruction of poor Batman. And Tim, you know, being the Robin at this point, tries to help, but there's only so much little Timmy can do.
Well, and Batman is really really mentally worn down.
Yeah.
Just like he's mentally worn down, it looks like why did he go into relapse for the last 8 years in Dark Knight Rises? Because the death of Rachel Dawes and Harvey Dent.
Yeah, and so he's been gone for 8 years.
And he's not mentally in it, I think, when he comes back as Batman. That's my theory.
I think that it's going to take something to make him have that transformation back into really being Batman.
And I think that's going to play in for Nightfall, where he was just winded down. He was just so tired and physically tired. I think that's going to be, for The Dark Knight Rises, him still dealing with the death of you know, his childhood love, and then the man who he thought could replace him as Batman in a political service aspect.
Yeah, I mean, it was really big. But there's some other, especially when we talk about No Man's Land, there's a lot of design aesthetic.
Yes.
That I feel was taken from No Man's Land. As you watch the trailers, you notice the bridges have all been destroyed. Because it seems that in Nolan's geography of Batman, there's a main Gotham City that works kind of like Manhattan, where it's an island unto itself. And then there are bridges from that island to, you know, more suburban city outside of that. And then, of course, on the outskirts is where, say, Wayne Manor is, you know, outside of technically the city limits. And I think that that's... And so that's what we're seeing happening here when we see the bridges all being collapsed. It's basically shutting off that center city and making sure that nothing can get on, nothing can get off. We see those overpasses, or what look like tunnel entrances, just
blocked with cars
piled up. I mean, basically, I think that they're creating almost a no man's land within the center of Gotham, where, I mean, all law essentially disappears and it becomes roaming bands of ruffians. You know?
Well, excuse me, I still have bronchitis. The interesting thing as well is that in one of the trailers, it's Commissioner Gordon and Gordon-Levitt. They're talking about how basically they're abandoned by the government, and that's what happened in No Man's Land. Is that the government abandoned Gotham because
they basically declared it was no longer U.S. territory?
Yeah, exactly, because the first one, there was a virus went around that decimated the city, and then you had this huge earthquake that basically destroyed it. It was just so beyond repair that what's the government going to do? It's just easier to kind of just write it off. And then Bruce Wayne goes to go to Washington, D.C. to try and talk the government to, like, look, you have to come help us and save us. And he's gone for months, and so people think that Batman has deserted them in this time of crisis.
So that's where he was, because it never really explains very well where he was in No Man's Land.
That's what happened.
He was trying to get the government to be involved again, which is why we see the rise of the second Batgirl, Cassandra Cain.
Mm-hmm.
It's because somebody has to pick up the mantle.
And how it ties in The Dark Knight is now it's just everyone man for themselves, so who's ruling the streets? It's the gangs and it's the police.
Yeah.
And if any of you played Arkham City... Arkham City was basically taken from No Man's Land.
Yeah, and I mean, it was closing off part of the city to just be
chaos. Yep. Yeah. And you see what happens in Arkham City is Penguin's trying to get territory, Joker's trying to get territory, Two-Face. The same thing in No Man's Land is every gang and every mobster and every what they use in the comic books, they call them freaks, you know, the Joker, Poison Ivy, mm-hmm. Two-Face. They're trying to get territory, and how they market is graffiti.
Yeah.
And you'll see in The Dark Knight Rises, you'll see that chalk of that the Batman signal, and that comes from No Man's Land comic, because Batgirl tries to get people to hope that Batman will come back, or just try to get the...
By tagging the bat symbol.
And you see the same thing. We don't know who's doing The Dark Knight Rises. I think it's the same thing where either he has come back or they're just trying to instill that hope for people that he will as they're doing the bat signal. So I love how they took that element from No Man's Land and put it into The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, regrettably, I don't think we're going to get a Huntress.
No, unfortunately.
Sad. That's okay. Catwoman will be there, which should be really interesting. Another, I think, very influential comic.
Probably the most.
In terms of tone,
yes.
And things like that is Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Rises. As we talked about, we mentioned Year One more than once in this podcast so far. But Year One was basically taking Batman back to his roots. It's only 4 issues. It's a little book if you want to read it, but it's definitely worth reading. It's before there are any... It's like Batman Begins. It's before there are supervillains. It's before, you know, things have escalated to that point. It's Batman becoming who Batman is. And so I definitely feel like, in terms of a primer of Batman books, Year One is the best one you could possibly read. I think it's the best Batman story that's been told so far.
I have to agree. It's just very unique.
It's
very different
just,
than anything else has been written.
It redefined Batman, both in terms of the comics, and like I say, it was hugely influential on Christopher Nolan. But in The Dark Knight Returns, which was written actually before Year One was, and it was the success of Dark Knight Returns that caused him to write Year One, basically what has happened is Jason Todd, the second Robin, has been killed.
Which then led to his actual death and continuity to death in the family.
Which is complicated, but they did eventually kill him because the fans wanted him to. They got a 900 number, and overwhelmingly said kill Jason Todd.
The reason why, he's obnoxious.
He is the worst Robin. But so Batman retires after that. And so we see Batman's now like in his 50s, and he's just, he still kept himself in shape, but the city has kind of fallen apart without Batman there, but he doesn't feel like he can do it anymore until things finally reach that tipping point again, and something prompts him to put the cowl back on. And that, more than anything, I think is what we're going to see in The Dark Knight Rises, because there's that 8-year gap where he has not been Batman, and Batman's been vilified. And
he's blamed for the death of Harvey Dent.
Yeah. And so Batman has gone from this folk hero to this villain who's just disappeared. But things will finally get bad enough that he has to come back. And that's what we see in The Dark Knight Returns. And that's why it's such an interesting comic. It's not necessarily the best comic. I don't love it. That's not true. I do love it, but I don't necessarily agree with it. You know, because
it's a hard read because there's a lot of captions.
An easy person to read anyway.
No,
anything that he does, but this is just so dense and so everything about.
There's a lot of different themes going on as well.
And it's not an easy read, but it's definitely a worthwhile read.
Well, and you see here in the Dark Knight Returns how, you know, people don't really want to deal with Batman. Everyone's saying, well, it's not a country issue, it's a Gotham issue, so we'll leave it to the county. And the county's like, well, it's not our big issue, it's Gotham's issue, so we'll leave it to Gotham. And eventually they have to deal with him because he's become such a political nuisance. Because what are you going to do with this vigilante who's kind of overtaking Gotham? You're going to see that, excuse me, with The Dark Knight Rises, because you're going to have, well, in the beginning, Batman, he quote-unquote supposedly killed Harvey Dent. So how do we deal with him politically? It's a very big political issue because they want to have this Memorial Day of Harvey Dent. So we need to catch Batman before that happens, just to kind of, I don't know, commemorative of what Harvey Dent did and what he stood for. And so I think that's playing into it. You have Commissioner Gordon, who is older, and he's kind of, you know, old guard, so they're kind of getting rid of him in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah,
you see that with,
you see here in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, with Ellen Yindel. And she doesn't like Batman at all, so it wouldn't surprise me the new commissioner doesn't like Batman. And probably leading the manhunt to find Batman in The Dark Knight Rises. So it's very heavily, I think, used for the new Nolan movie.
One thing we won't see, I promise you, is superpower Batman armor fighting Superman.
No.
Regrettably. But I haven't seen the film yet, and I don't even know if this is going to happen, but this might be a little spoilery. So, spoilers. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Batman fakes his death at the end of Dark Knight Returns. He lets Superman think that he's killed him, but he doesn't actually die, and Superman realizes that. But still, he goes underground to continue his fight against corruption. And it wouldn't surprise me if we don't have the literal death of Batman in Dark Knight Rises. If, you know, Bruce Wayne himself does not die, I think that the symbol of Batman
is going to
die. In some way, Batman is going to die and be laid to rest. And so I'm not sure how that's going to be. I don't know if it'll end happily with him going off to a romantic liaison with one of the two ladies in the picture. Or,
which I don't think she's Talia al Ghul.
Marianne Cotillard?
Yeah,
She's not. They've said she's not Talia.
Okay, good. Some people speculate. I don't think she is.
They've given her a different name. We don't know how she's going to fit into things. But
she helps out with the company, Bruce Wayne's company. And so people are saying that, I think I read somewhere that Nolan was saying she tries to help draw Bruce Wayne back out of the darkness. Because Bruce Wayne, as Bruce Wayne, is now a recluse.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see the relationship between Bruce Wayne and her, and then Catwoman and Batman. And
oh, I can't wait to see Selina. I'm not going to lie. I was not sold when they cast Anne Hathaway, because I like Anne Hathaway okay, but I didn't think that she would make a good Catwoman. But I think she sold me on Selina Kyle.
Well,
she looks great.
And if you see the Les Miserables trailer where she's singing as, I think it was Colette,
Fantine,
yes.
She also sells Fantine.
Yeah. That is what sold me, was to see how emotionally into the role she was, and just the, it was, it's a stunning trailer, but that's what I saw and thought, she's gonna be great, Selena Kyle. I don't know why it took another movie's trailer for me to decide that, but
and it worked. I'm glad that they're never referring to her as Catwoman, mm-hmm. because in the script, neither in the direction nor in the dialogue is she ever referred to as Catwoman. It's just implied that she, mm-hmm. her name is Selena Kyle, and she has things that look kind of like cat ears.
Uh-huh.
She's Catwoman.
Do you like the? So you do like the costume?
I like the costume.
I do too. Some people don't like in their. They don't like how it's not, you know, the regular Catwoman. But she looks like the Catwoman from the '60s TV show.
It's a lot similar to the way that Catwoman looks these days.
Uh huh.
Other than, I mean, Catwoman has more defined ears in her current outfit, but it's just a cat suit.
For the Nolan universe, it totally works.
It works. And I'm excited to see her backstory a little bit, because I'm curious to see where he's going to draw from for her.
Yeah, will it be Batman Year One where she was a prostitute? Or,
yeah, you know, or something else. Will she just be a cat burglar?
Yeah.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Because that's one of my few complaints with Year One, that she starts as a prostitute. I never really liked that characterization of Selena Kyle.
Yeah, it's just
that's my only complaint with Year One.
Because it really led to Catwoman being way over-sexualized in comics.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, she must have joined. She's a prostitute. Like, how many prostitutes actually enjoy having sex all the time?
Yeah, it's...
fanboy's fantasy.
That's my biggest complaint with Year One, is that she's a prostitute. And so I don't think that we're going to necessarily see that.
I don't think so either. I think she just is going to be someone from a very rough background, from a very troubled background, who's had to basically learn how to survive on her own, and does.
And But I think it'll bring up interesting conversation about the haves and the have-nots. If you've seen the trailers, her conversation with Bruce Wayne as they're dancing,
mm-hmm.
about how you're going to wonder how you lived so long, so big, leaving so little for the rest of us. It's going to have a lot of really interesting overtones.
Yeah.
And I hope it's not like... This is political Braden talking, so those of you who don't like my politics, you can tune out for 15 seconds. But I hope that it's not too overly conservative capitalism is the best way to go. Like saying that anyone who believes that there should be better distribution of wealth is going to, you know, riot in the streets, because we're not all crazy people.
I think what it is they've said it's taken from the Tale of Two Cities. And so they were saying that this story idea came before... the 1% and Occupy Wall Street.
And I believe that.
I believe that too. So it's interesting because Dark Knight, War on Terror, that was going on in 2008.
Yeah.
You have Occupy Wall Street, and then you have this whole thing of...
Which, again, I love The Dark Knight, but I don't love the politics of the film The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm. So it's...
So I think this might be one of those cases where I just have to say, cognitive dissonance between my political viewpoints and the media that I love.
Yeah, and the thing is,
It's just like, I love Battlestar Galactica. Do I agree with the fascism that is mostly portrayed as good in Battlestar Galactica? Of course not. Do I still love that show? Heck yes.
So, yeah. So there are people who are being a little upset because they're saying, oh, Occupy Wall Street... they're going to portray the psychos, or it's going to portray that, the rich need to be brought down to the level because they're ignoring the poor. I don't think that's what the Nolans are going for at all. I think it was, we read The Tale of Two Cities. It's a very interesting concept. This is going to be a war movie. This is
very
a war movie.
So. This is, the last one was a crime movie. This one's a war movie.
This is a war movie. And so I think if anyone has those concerns about the political messages, don't worry about it. Just enjoy
it anyway.
And even if it does have a political message that you don't care for, it's a movie. It's
and
a
just
movie.
Watch it anyway.
Just watch it. It's going to be amazing. My thoughts are, this is going to surpass The Dark Knight.
That's what all the critics who have seen it
said. I don't think Bane is going to be better than the Joker.
No. He won't be better than the Joker, but I feel like the overall film, I hope, will work better. Even than the Dark Knight did. It won't be as iconic of a role. It won't be a game-changing role or anything like that. But it'll be good.
Yeah, and I think this will be I think it'll be the best of the trilogy. I think it'll be a very fitting ending, and it will finalize the Dark Knight. Batman as a character, we're in the sense where they're not going to do offshoots. They're not going to keep it going, and it's done. And for the record, there is going to be no Nightwing or Robin.
And that's okay.
That's okay. We don't need it. I mean, there is a Robin in The Dark Knight Returns. You know, it's Carrie.
Carrie is
yeah,
one
Carrie
of my
Kelly.
Favorite characters in the whole book.
I think Gordon-Levitt is going to be that type of character where someone kind of rises up and wants to help Batman, but he's a police officer. He's not going to take on any mantle or...
And that works for me because, you know, he always... Nolan always said that there would be no kids running around in tights in his movies.
Yep.
And I'm glad that he is going to stay true to that because... As much as I like Robin conceptually, so often he's done so poorly.
Oh, very much.
A few times, I mean, I know a lot of people like Tim Drake. I freaking hate Tim Drake.
Really?
I don't like Tim Drake.
I love Tim Drake.
I know you do.
I love Tim Drake.
I know you do. And I really, I like Dick Grayson as an adult, but I hated him when he was Robin.
Oh, yeah, but as an adult, I mean, I didn't really care for Dick Grayson until they had the Black Mirror and he was Batman.
That's
and Grant
true.
Morrison
I didn't like him until he became Batman.
Oh,
after
now
he was Batman, now he's great.
He's great.
And Lil Damien.
Nightwing's a good series.
Lil Damien's my favorite of the Batman, or the Robins, just because he's a psychopath, and I like him.
Well, and Damien is just, he's very...
He's
intriguing as a character.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much things you can do with development.
Raised to be the ruler of the world by his crazy mother, and he just he brings a different dimension to that Batman Robin relationship because now he's like, you know, I've always treated these boys almost like my pupils, my sons. This is my actual flesh and blood son, and he's a freaking psycho murderer. I watched him murder people.
Well, it's like everything his fears of Robin becoming, Damien already is.
Already is.
It's like, oh my gosh, I got to revert program this kid. I don't know how I'm going
to
do it.
Teach these Robins how to uphold justice while not going for vengeance. And his son is like, dude, that guy was going to kill you, Dad. Of course I put a bullet in his brain.
So, I mean, for the record, people are speculating there will be no Robin in
no
The
Robin.
Dark Knight Rises.
No
so,
Robin.
But... Look, if this will be amazing, and
I hope so, because I don't usually like third movies in series.
They don't have a very good track record at all.
They don't. I mean, I'm almost always a second movie is the best in a
Empire
trilogy. Empire Strikes Back is my
two
favorite. Two Towers is the best of the Lord of the Rings movies. Of the original Spider-Man trilogy, Spider-Man 2 is the best. Of the X-Men trilogy,
it's X-Men 2
X-Men
United
is by far the best one. You know,
that's not even debatable. Yeah,
that's not even debatable. But because people can debate Spider-Man 1 or 2 with me, but no one.
Not with X-Men.
So I just feel like so often in trilogies, everything gets built up over two films. You have your dark second act, and then it
crumbles,
too tied up, and crumbles in the third film. So I'm really hopeful that for the first time ever, a third film cannot suck.
I don't think it will. And
I don't think it will.
Braden and I, we have our tickets for the midnight showing in IMAX, which means that we will be getting Bane posters that they'll be giving. And I looked it up. Our theater will actually be handing out Bane posters.
Yay!
Of that black and white gritty drawing.
We're going to hang it in the Grape Escape where we record this Bane.
Oh, yes, yes. And it's going up on my wall next to my Beware the Brat Little League poster that I have framed. And I will frame
Beautiful.
The Bane one. And...
It's exciting.
I'm excited.
It's exciting.
For 12:01 July 20th.
Yeah,
and
it should be a great film. We're really excited about it. If you have any questions about any of the things we talked about, or if you just want, you know, some advice in terms of what Batman things to read, check us out on Facebook. It's Between the Bubbles. Just search for us on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter. It's BTWNBBLS Between Bubbles. Just find us, follow us on Twitter. We're very, very responsive. If you have any questions for us,
you can email us
at betweenthebubblespodcast@gmail.com. We love your questions, but I think if we were to end this saying, what should you read? If you've never read Batman comics before, you're inspired by The Dark Knight Rises, what do you read? Give us one suggestion, a Batman book to go pick up at your comic book store today.
Any Batman book. I'd have to say the one that's going to be the most accessible would be The Long Halloween.
Good choice.
Not
one we talked about, but one that definitely influenced the second movie.
The Dark Knight.
We talked about how Year
One
was
And it's a sequel to Batman Year One.
Yeah. We talked about how Batman Year One was such an influence on Batman Begins. The Long Halloween is the big, big influence on The Dark Knight.
That was the first Batman story I read that I realized I want to read comics because of The Long Halloween. It is not your typical story. It's a mystery. It's a murder mystery. It's a crime mystery.
It takes the place
and
over a year.
The ending is just...
It's great.
It really was a great... great way to end in surprise, and it all came together.
Yeah, it really is one of the best Batman stories ever told.
So what about you?
Since you took the long Halloween, I'm going to say year one. Go back to the beginning, go back to the roots, and if you like year one, go with Dark Knight Returns.
Yep.
But start with year one.
Yep.
Get to know Miller's writing style through his best work, and, you know, enjoy it.
And then, honestly, you could pick up right now the New 52, starting at Batman issue one.
They have the first hardcover out. It's the first six issues.
Mm-hmm.
And
go to the App Store, the DC App Store, and just buy the issues. They're $2.99. Or no, they're $1.99 now because they go down a dollar.
Yeah.
So
you know,
get into it.
It's a good time to be a Batman fan.
Really
hop right in, or if you wanted to get in, say, to Batman Incorporated, we're only on issue 3 or 4.
Two's come out. Three's going to come out.
Is this month. Mm-hmm. So you can pick up the hardcover of the stuff in the past. There's lots of stuff you could pick up on if you're a Batman fan. But if you've never read Batman before, pick up Tim or Jeff Loeb. His first name is Jeff. Jeff Loeb and Tim Sales, the Long Halloween.
Yes, great artwork. Very, very unique.
Miller and Machiavelli's mm-hmm. year one. That's where you should start. So, yeah, this is our podcast. This is our first special podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back in between our Dark Knight, our second special of the Dark Knight Rises, with a normal episode of all the stuff that came out this week. But enjoy the movie this weekend. Go see it. Enjoy it. I hope that it's as good as we've psyched ourselves into thinking it's going to
be. Tell us what you think.
Yeah. Comment on the... we'll put up a little post on the Facebook saying, let us know what you think about The Dark Knight. Things like that. Just get involved with the community. It'll be a lot of fun. And we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening. And this has been Between the Bubbles. I'm Braden.
I'm Darren.
It's been a pleasure to have you with us. Have a good one.
Between the Bubbles is a production of Almost Midnight Media. Thanks again to Darren for hosting our panel today. My name is Braden, and thanks to Kevin McLeod and Brian Boyko for the bumper music. Hope to see you all soon.